Hey everyone, we once again had an audio glitch during this show. Luckily, we were recording it in our streaming software that we use to record this, so that's what we will use for the audio in this episode. It's not the best, but it was a great episode, and I wanted to release it anyway, and I am working on sorting out what happened, so hopefully this won't happen again. Please enjoy.
All right, welcome to Season 2, Episode 33, which is also Episode 65 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Rob. With me is someone who is FPGA emulated, Hugh.
That's right. That's right. Only fake instructions here. It doesn't take a very powerful FPGA to emulate me, to be really blunt.
But it's exact.
It's exact, yeah. Whatever the first FPGA was, that's powerful enough. Probably something made in 1942. All right. What has been going on? So, because I have so much free time lately, I mean, I've been working a lot, but like I don't have a commute anymore. So I basically have 2 hours more each day. And all my weekend plans have been canceled. So, good times. I've been going into my backlog, and I went way, way back in my backlog and decided to play this TurboGrafx CD game called JB Herold Murder Club. Have you heard of this?
I've heard of this. I haven't played this.
I have to not recommend it. Anyhow, I played it until I got to a point where I was stuck. It was at the end of the game, there are three people who have identified the killer by name. It's a murder mystery, if that's not obvious. Mm-hmm. But it wouldn't let me advance to the killer's confession. So I'm like, all right, this has to be a bug. Like, there's just no explanation. The problem is the gameplay is kind of nonlinear. Like, there's not an exact path through the mystery. You kind of go around and you interview people and you gather evidence and then you go back and interview them again and their responses change. And there's like 30 different people. And you can kind of, you know, you can kind of do it in any order you feel like. And I managed to do it in an order where you get stuck, completely, totally stuck. And I'm pretty sure it was a bug. So instead of just giving up, I decided I'm just going to go through and I'm going to write a program. I'm going to watch the memory on this game. And I'm going to see what changes every time I talk to people. And I'm going to make a giant Google spreadsheet of every event in the game. This is what happens when you have too much free time. And figure out what the optimum path is through the game, because it's really boring. Like, the game is really, really boring. You spend a lot of time just going and, like, talking to people, and there's, like, 20 different questions you can ask them, and you only really have to do one or two for each character, but you don't know which ones they are. So I just went through and found, sure enough, there's, like, one character text that if you... So here's what happens. Like, the way the game works is you talk to different suspects, and they give you their alibi, and if someone contradicts their alibi, then you get a search warrant for their house. And then you search their house, and if you find evidence that might implicate them in this murder plot, then you can arrest them. Okay? But once you arrest a character, that character obviously doesn't appear in their house anymore, and other characters in the game, if they have a dialogue about that character, their text also changes. Okay? So if I said, you know, I got the arrest warrant for Rob from Detroit, the next time I go to talk to someone about Rob from Detroit, they're gonna be like, Rob from Detroit, I can't believe you arrested that dude, right? So there's just a lot of possibilities. And I found one flow where if you do a dialogue, if you don't do one dialogue about a character before he's arrested, you're blocked out from it forever, and that dialogue is required to end the game. Dialogue contains, and here's the worst thing, the dialogue contains no information that's useful to solving the murder at all. The character literally says, I don't know that person. That's their dialogue. But I found it. Well, yeah. I mean, I found it, found the exact memory address that has to be set to 1 or 07 for, you know, you to be able to trigger this part in the ending. I'm like, tore all apart, figured it out. Yep, that's a game-breaking bug. And anyways, there's a link to it in the show notes. I have a giant article where I explain how the save RAM in this game works, and I talk about the game-breaking bug in here and all that stuff. So there you go. That's what happens when I have too much free time.
It's kind of amazing. Wow.
Yeah. Now, I would have just
moved to a different game.
Yes, that's what a sensible person would have done. There are many games I've quit on, but this one, I'm like, I know there's a path to solve this. Like, what did I do wrong? And it turns out I didn't do anything wrong. There's just a bug. And I've come up with like three or four other ways that I think you could get the game into like a completely unwinnable state. But I don't think the developers intended that. I mean, I think it looks like it's pretty thorough. Like, it's pretty hard to get the game blocked like that. So whatever. So that's all I've been up to. How about you?
A few things. So, yeah, last week was the Marble Madness knockout on Twitch. Okay. So, you know, Marble Madness, you could beat in like 2 minutes, 2-ish minutes.
Okay. I didn't know that. And,
And so the knockout is, it was like 20 or 30 people playing at the same time. And the person with the longest time is out. And then you just play again. So you could play Marble Madness many, many times and not have it be that long. And so a very great speedrunner called Jelzrik, I think that's how you pronounce it, he ended up winning. And all the other common people were kind of around the top. But, you know, it was kind of fun to watch. And it kind of got me thinking of, you know, what other games could you beat really quickly and mm-hmm. have like a knockout type speedrun event, you know? So that was fun to watch. I finally got into trying to see what was up with my Sega Genesis tower. Okay. I have, you know, all the attachments. And I switched the 32X cable, and it worked for 2 minutes, and then it stopped working and at the same time refused to turn off. Uh-huh. And then it wouldn't turn. So, like, the power button kind of died, and I think it just needs a full recap, but I have other Sega Genesis's Genesai.
So I think the thing that's confusing is the 32X might use a different power adapter than the main Genesis. And if you, like, the holes fit, and I think if you swap them, you could mess something up.
I'm using the adapter that is like the 3-in-1 adapter. I talked about like 10 episodes ago, maybe. Or something, where it's like, yeah, that could be it. But
maybe
it's
that's
the one
your problem.
That I recommend. Yeah, but one late night, I just ordered the analog Mega SG because I found out that you actually can use a 32X and a Sega CD with it. I didn't realize that, and I emailed Terra Onion because I have the Sega, whatever Terra Onion's like Genesis Everdrive analog, you know what I mean? Like, okay, whatever their version is, can play Sega CD games. But you can't play Sega CD and have a 32X plugged in at the same time. So I emailed them. They were going to come out with an adapter where you could put that thing right where the Sega CD would be and pretty much just use it as a SD card Sega CD attachment, if that makes sense, instead of sticking it through the top. And so I was like, listen, you said this is going to come out. You know, if it's not going to come out, can I literally just buy one of your test units? Like, you know, let me know what I could do. I really want this thing. And they wrote me back saying, watch Twitter, an announcement's going to be coming out very soon. So that's exciting. So anyway,
I'm mostly impressed that you were able to buy an analog product.
I was too. I think that's why I jumped on it.
Okay.
I don't know. I got the black model, which is the one I wanted. And so So I will have that thing on the side. I will have there's like a DAC, a digital analog converter that you could buy from analog that makes it so the 32X works. So I got that too. There's one company that makes a cable specifically for it, so you don't have to make your own. They said they'll be in stock in a few days. So yeah, I'm just spending money I really don't have. And then at the same time, months and months, I mean, I'm talking 6 or more months ago, I did a, Stone Age Gamer.
Yeah.
Where you could buy Everdives and stuff like that. If they don't have something in stock, you could put your email address in there, and right when it's back in stock, it just blasts out an email to everyone. Mm-hmm. Well, the other night I got an email that the Super SD System 3 was back in stock, and for you and no one else can see this, but I got it in the mail. I got it right here. I haven't opened it yet because it came in today, and I've been wildly busy. But yeah, so I will be hooking this up to my TurboGrafx and playing some Super CD and some arcade games on it. So it works, it plugs into the back of the TurboGrafx. It works kind of like an EverDrive, but you can also play the CD games and the arcade games, which there's like, what, 5 or 6? They use the arcade card. And it also it works like a turbo booster. It has like the AV outs.
Yeah, you have to have the, someone will email us to correct me on the hardware variants for the TurboGrafx, but I believe you have to have the turbo. The CD unit contains the turbo booster, because something else in the turbo booster is required to play CD games. I don't believe you can hook up. Yeah, I think it's built in, like
extra memory or something, maybe
something like that. Yeah,
I know. I had the right and left out that you would need for the CD, stereo CD sound.
For stereo CD sound, which isn't necessary. You don't necessarily need that for...
No, but it's like, why do I have a CD system if I don't have stereo? But then I also started playing Squadrons on PS4, which led to me putting in a news item that I probably would have skipped, but I put it in there anyway. But yeah, Squadrons is probably the best... one of the best Star Wars. I think I talked about this last time. Uh-huh. One of the best Star Wars simulators. So, kind of exciting. It's almost like I knew what it would be, and it is pretty perfect, but I'm still kind of like, cool, that's what I thought it would be.
So, Stone Age Gamer also sells Stone Age Gamer also sells an imitation turbo booster. I guess if you need that, called the Engine Block AV. It's pretty ugly.
Those turbo boosters are expensive. So I guess it saves you an eBay price.
Yeah.
Should we dive into some news here?
Yeah, news and stuff. So in this big Nintendo hack from earlier this year, there's information about an unreleased Game Boy Advance successor, which I guess is not the DS.
It's not the DS because they started working on it after the DS was actually in public hands. I think somewhere in there it says it only had one screen or was alluded to that, but okay. Pretty strange. Now, didn't the Micro come out after the DS was released? Wasn't there something?
It did, yeah. The Micro, that we just talked about, the Micro was after the DS, or right around the same time. It was very, very close. I mean, the Micro came out when you knew the Game Boy Advance was on its way out, so it had to be after the DS. I'll say it again, man. I like the Micro.
It gets technical, a little bit technical. There's some tech notes you could link to, but yeah.
So let's see. Nintendo Life has a thing about rare Nintendo consoles, by which they mean rare Nintendo console variants.
Yes, that's the catch. They forgot a word in their title. And... yeah, a lot of the end zone type stuff. I actually didn't get through this whole video because I was just kind of like, all right, it's a bunch of stuff I'm never going to see. Now, if it was a Nintendo console, if it was a successor to the Game Boy Advance SP, then I would be into this video. But
Right, but it's always possible you're at, you know, whatever yard sales are allowed again, that you're at one and you see some rare Nintendo 64 variant that they're selling for $1 because they don't realize they have this super exclusive variant.
I like, my favorite one in here is McDonald's in Japan actually use the DS for training, like how to scoop up fries correctly and stuff. It said about the six, it's at exactly the 6 minute mark. Yeah, it's at the 6 minute mark if anyone's interested, but it's pretty funny. So if you happen to be an employee that got to keep one of those, you might be sitting on something you could sell for some money there.
Wait, did you scoop the fries with the DS?
No, you use the pen and you virtually scoop them.
Oh, I thought you just put that whole thing in there. Okay.
Sega might miniaturize more consoles. All right.
Kind of not news, but the head of Sega's, I guess, current hardware division says that after 2021, absolutely expect more Sega gear. So,
okay.
I'm hoping for a Dreamcast. I'm not holding my breath.
Right. Well, will these be things you can actually play? You know, like things an adult could actually play. Yeah, yeah. You know, like if you have normal human hands, like you could use them.
I don't know. I'm hoping for a Dreamcast. Maybe a Master System, but it'll probably be something not great.
So here's what I think they're going to do. This is a prediction for me. So a number of Dreamcast games have been ported to Android, like Crazy Taxi and definitely Crazy Taxi. And I suspect they'll release something called like the Dreamcast Mini, which is actually an Android console playing the Android versions of Dreamcast games.
Oof. That would be a kick in the stomach.
You heard it here first. It's the kind of thing I can see, not so much Sega, but I can see companies doing that because it's a lot easier for them to, you know, they've already done like Dreamcast Greatest Hits on Android. So, you know, like they've got that code, they already know how to run it. You don't need like the highest end hardware to run that stuff versus actually emulating a Dreamcast accurately I haven't tried it on like the Raspberry Pi 4. I'm assuming it's still not great.
Yeah, I've only emulated it on PC. I kind of feel like the Saturn will be next for the Sega Minis.
No chance. No one can even emulate that correctly today.
Well, the Mega is, right?
I thought that was like an FPGA thing. And I don't know what again, without actually seeing... Okay.
No, they switched it to software. I actually think they contributed code to some Saturn emulators that... made it a bit better.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to see it to believe it.
Yeah. But I'm sure I'm not going to post any more stories like that unless there's some actual news on it. That's the last one. Sticking with Sega, Jet Set Radio composer Hideki Naginuma tried to be an employee of Nintendo twice. So he did the fantastic music in Jet Set Radio, probably one of, I think, the best soundtracks ever, at least one of the most impressive original soundtracks ever. And he went into Nintendo twice and interviewed, and they didn't hire him. And people are petitioning Nintendo now to get him to do the next Splatoon game, because the music does sound similar. And I think that would be incredible.
Yeah, I actually have never played Jet Set Radio, whatever it's called. Jet Set Radio Future?
Well, that's the one for Xbox.
Okay. The Dreamcast one is just Jet Set Radio.
Yes.
Okay.
And that'd be a good Game Club game.
Well, if I have it on a Dreamcast sampler disc, I will try it.
Yes.
Yeah, one of my many bizarre eBay purchases is when I just bought like a box of Dreamcast samplers.
That's actually a cool purchase.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all right. I don't play them as much as I thought I would.
So here's a story that I wouldn't have included had I not been playing Squadrons, but Kotaku lists all the Star Wars flight simulator type games like TIE Fighter and X-Wing and Rogue Squadron and even like Pod Racer and stuff like that. They do their rating. And there's a lot in here I have not played, but I think for what I played, it's in pretty good order. TIE Fighter's number one.
Okay.
Right around the middle is Star Wars Arcade and Empire Strikes Back Arcade, which I think is, you know, pretty fair. I would have put X-Wing versus TIE Fighter a lot higher. That was in the middle, too. And have you ever played the Star Wars Battle Pod? They had it in arcades a few years ago.
No. You have to sit in it, right? It's the thing you have to get inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I haven't done it. I mean, I was kind of a germaphobe before this whole virus thing that we're doing. So, like, climbing into a pod where other people have been breathing and sneezing and whatever else people do.
Yeah.
No, I'm not doing it, man.
I really need to get my hand on these this Rogue Squadron games. I only have the one on Nintendo 64. But, yeah, if anyone hasn't played the Star Wars X-Wing and TIE Fighter games on PC, do it. It's great. Get yourself a flight stick and just play them. Mm-hmm. And there's actually mods you could download that up-res the graphics. But yeah, I know we try not to put lists that other people came up with on their show, but I've been dabbling with that stuff, with that series lately, so why not? Next story is one that's pretty close to you.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. This is a history of the Galloping Ghost Arcade down in the Chicago area. Which, yeah, talk about businesses that need some kind of bailout right now. It's a very, very hard business. It's got to be a really, really rough time for them. But yeah, I mean, if it's an interesting article to hear about like the history and the motivation and all the work that went into building it. And how it originally started with like one big barn purchase. So it's a cool little article. Yeah, I mean, hopefully we get back to a place when we can all go to arcades again.
Yeah, and Galloping Ghost is just fantastic. Anytime in Chicago, I make a point to stop by. And if anyone doesn't know, I think it is now the biggest arcade in the world, right? I think it has the most arcade cabinets, including stuff like Primal Rage 2 and other things you can't play anywhere else.
Yeah, the problem is if you make that claim, like eventually there'll be like some prince in Dubai that decides he wants to have the world's largest arcade, even though he was born in like 1995, and just purchases millions of dollars of machines. I guess maybe there's the Pinball Museum. But I don't know if you're counting pinball as different from arcade games. I mean, it obviously is different from arcade games.
Yeah, I'd say it's different. Yeah, I think that's different. But yeah, a beautiful place. And there's a video, a mini documentary that goes along with that on that site. So definitely worth a watch. This next one's a stupid story, but I put it in here anyway. I'm going to TLDR this one for everyone. So Donkey Kong Country 2. Diddy's Kong Quest.
Yeah. It's a play on words. Get it? Conquest?
Yes, exactly. He just realized that the name was a pun. And, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know if he just realized it or he just decided to write about it, but yeah. There you go. If anyone else didn't pick up on that pun of a name yet, there you go.
Uh-huh. I picked up on that pun of a name like almost 30 years ago. I didn't think it was... I can understand it, like, Diddy Kong's Quest maybe is easier to remember, but yeah. Okay.
And, well, there are things that every year, you know, I don't know if it's sayings or whatnot, I pick up on stuff that everyone else picked up on years ago, and I have an aha moment about it. But I don't write an article about that. Mm-hmm. Is this next one yours, or did I forget to put...
No, I have no idea what this is. What is this?
Okay. So this is a new level in Mario Kart, I think 64, even though it keeps saying SNES. This does not look like SNES to me. Where it's a new, like, ghost world. Yeah, this has to be Mario Kart 64. And it's called Ghost Valley 1 Slime Server. And you could play as a Boo, and it's a new track. So there you go. Oh, it's created by Slime Server. Slime Server. I don't know if that's a person or what. Let me look that up. You know, my internet is going really slow.
Mm-hmm.
I will let everyone else look that up. My internet's going too slow. But there you go. If you want a mod for a 3D Mario Kart game, this one actually looks pretty cool. I just can't really place which one it's from, though. Because the video is really tiny.
It is, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's either Nintendo 64 or a Super FX game.
Up next on Retro RGB, you can plug in any modern controller into your Nintendo 64 with this little gadget. It's called the USB 64. And to me, it just looks like a bread box, or breadboard.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, that's exactly what I was thinking, too. Like, it's not the most aesthetic thing of all time. Yeah, yeah. But if for some reason you really want to use, like, a Dreamcast analog controller on your Nintendo 64, I guess you could do it with this. I think the idea was to use PC ones.
Or use a PS4 controller and do like GoldenEye with dual analog sticks, I guess, on one controller, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a more logical use than what I was thinking.
But the source code and stuff is on GitHub. That's pretty cool. What do we got next here?
Hackaday, exploring the abandoned birthplace of the 6502 in Commodore 64. So what is this, a video of breaking and entering into an abandoned building?
Yeah, not only that, but it looks more like a haunted house video, and the building's been gutted. So he'll go in, and I'm not making fun of this person. Like, I completely understand and respect, you know, 6502 praise. But this building's abandoned, and at one point, you know, it's just like, here's where the front office would have been. Like, okay. I just wanted to include that in there because we talk about the 6502 a lot here.
Yes, he does find some broken Commodore scrap towards the end of the video, though. So there is a payoff.
Nice. I did not get that far. I was just like, what am I watching?
I skipped to the end to see if there was anything good. Otherwise, like, you and I could just find, there's empty warehouses, and I could find an empty warehouse in Waukegan or something, right? And I could just be like, yeah, this is where the first Apple was made. Let's look around.
Oh, God.
Console Wars TV show. We didn't talk about this before. We didn't talk about this article. Yeah.
No. And exactly. That's why I put this in here. Because, you know, remember I said, like, wasn't this supposed to be like a dramatization? And yes. So apparently from, the creation of this book, the idea was to have this be a show, and who was it? Seth Rogen got into it pretty early. And so they did that thing on Netflix, which was the little documentary thing. But they're also doing the dramatization of this on CBS All Access. So have you ever watched the show Halt and Catch Fire?
I've never even heard of that.
You should watch it. I implore anyone to watch it. It's a dramatization where, you know, I think it's supposed to be compact in the first season, and they literally bit by bit decode a CMOS chip or a BIOS chip. And stuff like that. They end up like creating, you know, like a Yahoo type, you know, thing in the 90s. They create, I think it's supposed to be the Osborne computer. They create that in one of the seasons, where it's just following this group of people in a fictionalized history of computers. But it sounds way more boring than it is. There's a lot of debauchery going on.
Okay.
Highly recommend that show. Highly, highly recommend it. It's like Breaking Bad for nerds. Anyway, okay. that's what this sounds like it's going to be. Except more fact-based. So, I don't see a date on this, but I'm sure we will talk about it when it's out, even though no one has CBS All Access.
I'm not even sure I've heard of that either.
Yep. It's probably going to be available on torrents as well.
What is this thing? I didn't add this either. What is it? Sega announces Virtual Fighter X esports.
Yeah, so Sega's getting deeper into the esports, and they're going to have different competitions for the different Virtua Fighter, what would you say, revisions? So all the different Virtua Fighter games, not just like the latest, most modern one. So I think that's pretty cool that they're doing it that way.
By coincidence, today I am wearing my Virtua Fighter 432X t-shirt. This is an actual shirt that I got for free a very, very long time ago that I probably could eBay for like hundreds of dollars. But instead, I keep it in my closet and I wear it a couple times a year. It says Virtual Fighter and it has the characters and then says 32X along the bottom.
Nice. I didn't even know a shirt like that existed.
Yeah, it's probably rare. I probably shouldn't be wearing it, but I'm going to wear it until eventually it falls apart and I will have no regrets at all.
No.
Hold on. Virtual Fighter 32X shirt. I'm going to go look at eBay right now. Right now. Okay. Do you want to guess what people are asking for this shirt that I'm currently wearing right now on eBay?
Since it's got to be a lot since we're still talking about it. I'm going to say $49.
No, you are wrong. The lowest price right now, $157.99.
That is crazy.
With $6 shipping. A slightly better one, $200. Someone is asking. Now, this one, of course, is in much better shape than mine. Like, I've had this shirt. I've worn it many times. I guess I could have stashed.
It has the regular Street Fighter logo on it. It has everything that we could create that shirt with available. We could totally just make those and drive those prices down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a trivial shirt to make. The only thing that's unique is it says 32X on it.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much yeah. So there you go. I'm currently wearing a $200 shirt that we're done recording. I'm just going to throw right in the laundry.
That is awesome.
Yep. Good.
Wow.
I don't think they're going to get the $200. I need to go and see what the actual, like, what people actually have paid for this shirt that I'm currently wearing.
Yeah.
All right. Look, man, can't take it with you, right? Like, you know, I didn't spend the $200 on something stupid anyways, so.
Yeah, you don't buy stuff just to not use, right?
Yeah, I mean, I paid nothing for this, so I don't feel like I'm out $200 wearing it.
Yeah. NintendoLife.com, again, someone's made an NES game that can track the International Space Station. Did you ever think you would hear that sentence in your life?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I heard something about, like, refrigerator-sized asteroid is supposed to hit the Earth, like, the day before the election. Which, of course, that sounds bad, but, you know, unless it's a direct hit on something important. Like, I get it. You wouldn't want a refrigerator-sized asteroid hitting your house, but it's not going to, like, cause a mass extinction, right?
No, no. But you should make a Genesis game that tracks it.
Yeah, but I'm saying, if I saw an article that said Genesis game tracks asteroid that's going to hit Earth on Election Day, yeah, fine. Okay.
What this does is it accepts... you plug a Raspberry Pi in somehow to the Nintendo, and you put this as an actual cartridge you put in. And through the Raspberry Pi, it feeds... Oh, the Raspberry Pi connects through the controller port. I'm sorry. And the Raspberry Pi feeds controller port information, so 16 buttons or something, and or combinations and stuff like that. And the Raspberry Pi gets the data from the International Space Station and just displays it on the Nintendo screen, like what country it's over, on a little world map there. So, pretty cool idea for a project.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like this one a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy is pretty smart. Good idea.
Cool Baby RS-3128, a retro handheld for the Terminator.
It's a bad title, but this one's better than a lot of the other ones. This one, it doesn't do the Nintendo 64 stuff well, but it does everything up till then really well. And it actually has some good quality build to it.
Hmm. They're actually saying one of the cons is build quality in their review.
And if you watch the video, he says build quality is good.
And then he has a link where you can buy it on Alibaba, which is a site I don't have an account on.
No, yeah, don't buy stuff on Alibaba if you're listening to this.
Okay. Like, I don't know anything about that site. So, I mean, I've heard of it. I know it's to buy import stuff.
Well, I've used it not for a, not in a long time, but it seems fine. I've always got my stuff from it, but also, you don't know when laws over there are going to change, and then, I don't know, they own all your information or something like that. I don't know. You just never
know. Yeah, they already have it. I don't
know. Yes. So it doesn't matter.
Yes. I mean, my wife had noted that that Barnes & Noble apparently got hacked recently, and all their credit card numbers that have ever been used at Barnes & Noble were stolen or something to that effect. And I'm like, well, if it makes you feel better, the hackers already had those numbers. Like, I don't think they got anything new.
And since no one has used Barnes & Noble in years, they didn't get many new numbers.
But yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, so I don't, whatever.
All right. But so also I want to put that there because it reminded me of the Vita. And I love gaming, retro gaming, my Vita. And that might be a simpler solution, but it also might blow up. So there you go.
All right. We got to get through these. We got way too much news here. Beyond Donkey Kong looks at Nintendo's often overlooked arcade heritage. So this is a book about Nintendo arcade games, older ones.
Yeah, correct? And it's written by Horowitz, the guy who created the Sega 16 webpage, which is a very, very good webpage, sega-16.com. If you want to know anything about Sega hardware, it's there. And yeah, this looks like a cool book. I might have to pick this up. So it's just Nintendo arcade cabinets.
Yes.
A lot of people forget that they're in the arcade. But yeah, to keep the show moving forward, nerdlypleasures.blogspot.com, a beginner's guide to running an Apple IIe. This is kind of the everything you've ever wanted to know about Apple IIe, but we're afraid to ask kind of thing.
Yes, a really, really good article about if you want to run original Apple hardware, like what model to look for, what add-ons to get, you know, what kind of gotchas to look for to indicate it might be a bad unit. Really, really good article. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is not how to emulate the Apple II. This is really like you want to build a working Apple II today.
And it's really detailed, but not too long, so it's not overwhelming. Just, yeah, fantastic write. write-up. So, yeah. And then just one last item here before we get to the topic-ish, because it's not, I don't think it's actually a topic, but Evercade will have Doodle World on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, among other things, but that's really cool. So, a bunch of great indie games. So, shout out to that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good to see. It really is.
Yeah. And then our last news item / kind of topic.
Sure. The Analog, who I was just complaining about, announced that they will make a TurboGrafx, SuperGrafx, Turbo Duo type system, basically a thing to play all the different TurboGrafx experience for $200. They will have pre-orders at some point. You will not be able to get one, but you can try. And I would definitely buy this if I didn't have to like pre-order it at the exact second it comes out.
Yeah, you'd have to start right in your bot now to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It looks exactly like a Turbo Duo. I mean, almost exactly like a Turbo Duo.
Yeah, with just a front slot loader.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of a flip-top lid, it's a loader. And instead of like the card slot is a little bit more hidden too. Like aesthetically, it's pretty nice. I would definitely like this because the Turbo Duo, like those systems are all dying. Like, unless you want to recap it and replace the internal battery, you're not going to have a functional Turbo Duo anymore.
And the CD mechanics.
Yeah, you know, on my Duo, the CD is the part that works fine. But I've had to recap it, and now the save memory, which I should have just done at the same time, is shot too. So I pretty much just emulate everything now. And I would definitely get this. I mean, I have a pretty huge TurboGrafx PC Engine library here. And I would definitely be happy to own one of these. I just don't think there's any possibility that I end up buying one due to logistics.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try, but this is kind of the story of my life. Not 30 minutes after I got my shipping notice for the Terra Onion TurboGrafx thing we talked about at the beginning of the show was this thing announced. So there you go. This is my life. It's FPGA powered, and it has, you know, the super graphics, all the chips that you need all built in. So even like the arcade card stuff, you could do HDMI out. It has an SD card slot that they say is for firmware updates, but come on, that's got to be for just plain SD cards, right?
Yeah, I assume so. I mean, here's the thing: like, if you import games, the TurboGrafx isn't really that expensive of a system to collect for if you don't mind getting Japanese games.
Mm-hmm. Which there's a lot, like Bomberman 94. You don't need to know the story, but it's one of the best games ever. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and some of them, like the game I just mentioned, playing today, JB Herald Murder Club, the English and Japanese versions are on the same CD. Whether you buy the American or the Japanese release literally doesn't matter at all, because they put both versions on it.
Oh, I didn't realize they could do that, so it's kind of the Neo Geo kind of model. That's cool.
Yeah. They got a lot of space. You know, it's a CD game. There's really not much Redbook audio on there. There's only a couple of songs. So there's just no reason not to just have both versions on there. And then there's other just weird stuff. Like, you can get Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego in English as a Japanese import, but you literally can't get an American version because they didn't release one.
That's so strange.
Yeah, I was thinking of like doing a review of that one next, or we're comparing it to like some other... Basically trying to figure out which version of Carmen Sandiego, like which PC version it's closest to.
And I should say that 8-Bit Do already came out with that TurboGrafx controller that, you know, this claims it'll have lag-free support for, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And one of the coolest.
It's a pretty good controller. Yeah, that one right here.
Yeah, that is nice. We didn't mention the, what's the pocket thing called? And the analog pocket also has a $29 adapter that will let you play Who cards with it now.
Yes.
If you can buy the analog pocket.
Yes, which I tried and I failed. I know Zach got one of those. Maybe Zach can just wait and then buy us one so we could just Venmo him or something. and then we just had a list of games here that we just wanted to shout out that we'd be excited to play in this to kind of give this this part of the show a little bit more meat.
Okay, sure.
Since yours is on top, did you want to go through yours?
Yeah, I mean, my list is very predictable. I mean, obviously, I would put East Book 1 and 2 as, like, the number one game you'd want to play. I think it's kind of, at least in the U.S., kind of the hallmark game. If this supports patches... Well, no, because you can burn your own, I guess. So there is a East 4 English translation that you can burn yourself and presumably play on here. It plays on Original Duo, so why not? A lot of great RPGs. I got a bunch of them. So by the same developers as East 1 and 2, you have stuff like Dragon Slayer. Not Dragon's Lair, Dragon Slayer. Which is the first part of the Legend of Heroes series, which has, actually in the US, the like next installment of the Legend of Heroes series comes out at the end of this month. So it's a series that's been running since, you know, the late 80s. If you like RPGs. If you want something that's a little more accessible for like average, I don't say average players, but people who aren't into RPGs, Splash Lake. So Splash Lake is a action puzzle game, and it's hard for me to come up with a game like to compare it to. Maybe a little bit. I mean, it's not really like Bomberman, but it's a similar concept where you're trying to trap enemies on a board, but it like the play isn't anything like Bomberman. But if you like Bomberman, you'd probably like Splash Lake. And that's like a super rare game because it never got ported to anything else. And I wrote down Dynastic Hero, which is one of the Wonder Boy games. It's not really the best in the series. I think like Dragon's Curse or Dragon's Trap, depending what you're playing, is the best. But Dynastic Hero is really good too. And the Turbo Duo version has, you know, Red Book Audio, which is kind of the big plus. And in terms of... there is, and I can't remember, I don't think it got a US release. It was on the Nintendo Virtual Console. But it's another thing where, like, the Japanese version has English text as an option. So, like, I have the import, and I had no problem playing it at all. So, unless I'm confusing it with... Unless they patched it... For the Virtual Console version, that's what I'm thinking of. I might have to go back and look at both again, but it's a pretty... regardless, there's an English version of it that can be played. That's the bottom line. Dungeon Explorer 2, which is, I think, 1,000 times better than the first game. I like the first game, but Dungeon Explorer 2 is just much more... it has more RPG elements and is sort of bigger and has a full story. Overall, I'm a really big fan of that game. And I picked all CD games. You picked, I think, almost all chip games on your list here.
All but one, yeah. So the easy ones, I mean, I'm just a huge, you know, Bonk's Adventure guy. So 1 and 2. Devil's Crush, I talk about in every single show. Ninja Spirit, just a fantastic, fantastic side scroller, I guess, beat 'em up, slash 'em up. I don't know what you call it. Ninja game. If you play any of those games, I mean, those are top tier games. Military Madness, a strategy game. Metal Marines was a game club game once, and I would compare it to that. Except Military Madness is probably a little bit better. And then Bomberman 93 or 94. Take your pick. I don't think we got 94 in the States, but I like it better. I think it's almost the same game as the one that came out on the Saturn. But just fantastic games. And then Galaga 88, which was also a Game Club game. I think my favorite version of Galaga. And then the only CD game I picked, Cotton, which is a very expensive game that is the first cute-em-up game I ever played that you are a witch flying around on a broomstick shooting stuff up. And just another fantastic game that you can't afford to buy on eBay right now.
So is that on the TurboGrafx Mini Classic, whatever it's called?
Cotton? Oh, I don't... No, it is not on there. Which, I mean, that makes sense. But, yeah, those are the games I will be playing first if I ever get this this Duo Analog.
Yeah, if I'm able to order one, I will order one. Maybe if Analog's listening. Yeah, $200 totally, yeah, way, way cheaper than trying to buy TurboGrafx stuff on eBay today. Way, way better price. Again, my concern is just that, like, even though it's kind of a niche, whatever the correct pronunciation. Dude, that's bad when you can't pronounce that. Whatever's the correct way to say it. I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, I don't know what I was talking about. You have to edit this. I start a sentence and then just...
This one last thought about this that we did not mention is it also does stuff like scan lines and stuff like that. So that's stuff that I'm excited for. A few scalar options and vertical stretch and stuff like that. So
yeah. So the only reason that I think there's a chance you might be able to buy this is because it's still a relatively small number of people who own the physical games. And if in fact the SD card slot really only truly is used for upgrades, then people aren't going to buy it, because otherwise the only way to play these games is to download the ROM, burn it to a CD and play it that way, right? There's no copy protection. There's nothing secret about burning TurboGrafx games. It's just that now, why would you do that instead of play it on an emulator? Like, if you're already, right?
Well, cool. Should we jump to Game Club?
Yes, we should.
And mine's gonna be pretty short. I mean, this episode is going a bit long, so that is fine. But I did Splatterhouse 2. I picked this because it was on the Mega Drive and Genesis, and I always just thought of Splatterhouse as a TurboGrafx game. And it takes place 3 months after the first one, and you sort out that you could save Jennifer. And yada, 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 who cares about a story in this game? The music and sound is pretty great. I don't think they upgraded the gameplay enough for me to make it a fantastic game. Like, the original one, I think, is well known that it looked really nice, but when you play it, it's actually kind of boring. Like, yeah, there's a lot of gore and stuff like that. This is one of those games that, yeah, you just kind of memorize the patterns in each level and kind of good to go. I don't know. I could take or leave this game. What did you think about this one?
Yeah, I thought it was all right. I mean, I think it's kind of a technically and mechanically better than the first game. I think it played a lot better than the first game. I mean, it's similar, but I think it's a little bit better. I like the soundtrack a lot, especially the boss music. I thought the boss music was really great. I was really confused as to why they bother having the story to this game, though. Like, there's a story. Like, just go, like, title screen, dude in mask fighting zombies. That's all they need.
That there must have been some kind of legal action or threat of legal action, because in the first one, it just looks like Jason from the Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah.
And in this, they change his mask up just enough where it's not him.
Yeah. It looks not like a Michael Myers mask, but it's solid white. It's not a hockey mask.
And this is done by Now Productions, who did classics like Dance Dance Revolution on the Game Boy.
I like developers that have a lot of range like that.
No, they did a lot of ports, like a lot of Namco volumes on the PlayStation, and they did Katamari Damacy. on PlayStation 2.
All right.
So kind of a wide range there, but yeah, I don't have much more to say about this game other than it kind of hit that spooky factor for October, so I appreciated it for that.
Yep, yeah, I definitely liked it. So I did I did Seventh Guest, which again I spent a bunch of time trying to figure out how to run in a virtual machine or in DOSBox before remembering that I have owned it on Steam for years. Steam literally just boots up ScumVM because you see the ScumVM splash screen when you start it. So it's also, you know, it's not a port, it's a ScumVM game, which is good. If they deal with all the configuration stuff for me, great. So I'd mentioned I played the sequel quite a while ago, but never got into the original. Just because I didn't own a computer or something like that when the first game came out. I didn't own a computer, and even if I did, I didn't have like an extra $50. But the second game, I had a computer, and I think I'm pretty sure I got the second game for free. Because I was working at a game store at the time, and we would occasionally get promo copies of games. That's probably another rare item. I have like a promo pre-release copy of 11th Hour. I should look for that on eBay sometime too. But anyhow, it's a game. Yeah, I mean, it starts with an very long intro. I don't know, it seemed like 10 minutes. And then you're in a haunted house, and you do puzzles, and as you do puzzles, you kind of learn more about the ghosts that are inhabiting the house. And that's about it. So I overall thought the game was pretty cool. I really don't like the navigation controls. Like, that has not aged well. Like, how you actually go from room to room in the house, because it's very slow, very clunky. You'll click on a door or something, and instead of entering the door, you, like, turn 70 degrees and are now looking at a wall. Like, there's a lot of, like, clunkiness in the controls. I get that for the time it was released, which is early 90s, this was, like, amazing. So I'm trying to frame it that way. The puzzles themselves, I did three or four of them, and I didn't think they were very hard. And I remember, you know, back in the day that we sold, like, 1,000 hint books for the Seventh Guest. And I'm trying to figure out, like, why did people need hint books so much? But then I realized a lot of the puzzles are things that were like computer science school programming problems. So it's stuff like, how do you fit 9 queens on a chessboard in a position where that none of them can attack each other, right? That's the kind of thing that in like computer science 102 you had to do for a homework project. I think I did that literal assignment in a computer science class of like writing an algorithm to figure out how to place chess pieces in certain positions. And most of the puzzles were kind of felt like computer science homework, really. So now I understand, like, okay, so if you went through and you did all this stuff before, this was a game written by programmers. They went back on stuff they learned and so on. So overall, I like it. I think it is a good game for this time of year. I think some of the controls and stuff, like I mentioned, haven't really aged well. But overall, I thought it was pretty fun. How about you?
Yeah, I already had it installed, and I pretty much just watched the intro and thought, I remember this. So I didn't do too much of it this time. Yeah, there was some where it felt like you needed the, not the guidebook, but the manual. I think that gives you a few hints. And I really think that it hasn't aged well because it's just really kind of grainy video and goofy acting. And it's just, yeah, it's a puzzle game. I've never beat this one, though. I haven't even watched a video of it till the end. But do you like, I've never played the sequel, 11th Guest, is that?
11th Hour, yeah. That I played all the way, I did play that to the end back in the day. It's very, very similar. It has way more video, though. Like, there's a lot more story. And I actually kind of like the story in that game. Like, it's a pretty serviceable horror plot. And the puzzles, I don't remember the puzzles in 11th Hour very well at this point, but it's on like 3 CDs. I mean, it's a much longer game, mostly due to video. And there were a couple, I never got the hint book, but there were a couple puzzles where it's like, It took 2 or 3 days to get through them. I mean, not like, I don't mean like I sat there for 48 hours. I mean, it, you know, you tried for an hour, you give up, you think about it some more, you come back, you try again. Like, there were a lot of puzzles that were really, really difficult in that one. But overall, one of the things I sent the Hard4Games guys was a video called Making of the 11th Hour, which is some like random VHS tape I have. That's like a 30-minute promo tape for the game. So maybe I haven't checked if they have posted. They definitely ripped it because they sent me the, you know, high def rip that they did. I haven't seen if they posted it on their channel yet. I assume they will at some point, but I think all the stuff I sent them, they were planning to space out over time because obviously doing a bunch of rips all at once would be kind of boring.
That could actually bring down their viewership.
yeah, you want to space it out. I get it totally, man.
Let me see. Did they send me the rip of that? Yeah, there it is. Atari Jaguar. Baking of 11th Hour. Yeah, it's 2.9 gig video they sent me. So hopefully they post that.
I did have a Mandela effect type thing with this game where I could have sworn I had this on a console, but that none of those exists. And I looked it up. And do you know the trivia on why it was never on a console?
Oh, because it was made by a small company?
No. I did not know this until 2 days ago. Nintendo bought the rights at the time, and they only had Super Nintendo out. And they did it just so Sega couldn't get it on Sega CD. Great. That's hilarious.
I remember this now. Yes, I remember this now. I think it was around the time, was it around the time that they thought they were going to do a CD, though?
They probably had, yeah, the Nintendo PlayStation in the works.
Yeah, because I wrote an article called, there's an article on my website called, 9 console ports that should exist. And I think, 7th guest for Saturn is on that list of things. I wrote something like that, or 7th guest for 3DO.
It makes perfect sense. They would have made a ton of money, but Nintendo stopped that.
Yeah. What did I call that? Oh, boy. I have to find this here. This is how bad it is. I can't remember, articles I wrote. Although I did write this quite a while ago. Hold on. I've got to search my own site here. I could just Google my own site, but that seems wrong. 10 video game ports that should exist. That's what I called it. And yeah, 7th guest for Sega Saturn was one I put on there.
Yeah, that just makes perfect sense.
Along with stuff like King's Quest V for Sega CD. That should exist, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Bloodstorm for Super Nintendo. That should be a thing.
I don't know Bloodstorm.
Bloodstorm was an arcade fighter from the mid-90s. It's kind of like a sequel to Time Killers, kind of unofficially. It's a very Mortal Kombat-inspired game. But it came out at a time when every single one-on-one fighting game got ported to something.
Yeah.
Ooh, Lucky and Wild for PlayStation. Why isn't there a Lucky and Wild home version?
Maybe Nintendo bought the rights and stomped it out.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Catch and Kill. That's what they're doing.
Yes, Catch and Kill. Yes, that's Nintendo's motto there. If you, listeners, have played any of these games or any games we've ever talked about or not talked about, doesn't matter, have any cool projects, know of any cool projects, even want to show us your cool arcade collection or setup, email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. And we also have Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net. It'll get you past all the politics and stuff and right to video games on Facebook. And we're also on Twitter, at RGC Podcast.
Okay.
And if you want to play some games with us, I pick Fester's Quest on NES for next episode.
Yeah. Nice pick. That game is... So I think Fester's Quest is way better than its reputation.
I like that game, and I beat it when it came out when I was a kid. And it's a spooky October game, so there you go.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with Dracula X... / Castlevania Rondo of Blood, because I believe they're the same game.
think so.
I will be
there
doing,
might be a little bit difference.
My understanding is they're roughly the same game. So play either one. I don't care. I'm going to play the one that's on the TurboGrafx Mini.
Yeah, I think that's Rondo. Yeah.
It could be. It could be Dracula X. I don't know. The title screen's in Japanese. So, actually, it might be in English. It's weird where it's Japanese, but then the intro's in German. Like the voiceover.
That, yeah. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I was reading about why there's so many like German words in Japanese games, right? And it has to do with like, you know, hundreds of years ago, European markets were trying to find ways to trade with Japan, and Germany was the only country that figured out, it wasn't even called Germany at the time, was the only one that figured out how to like successfully trade with Japan. And so Japan and Germany had formed like a very strong relationship like 200 years ago, and that still kind of permeates today. Yeah, it's some piece of history. Maybe like oversimplified, can do a video on this or something so I can actually understand it.
But we do have some emails. Well, one email.
Yes. From Majors, talks about Jesse Jager in Cleopatra's Curse, which is hard for me to pronounce. And said, yeah, this has been talked about on the TurboGrafx PCE forums, and it looks to be pretty solid. And he met the developer at Midwest Gaming Classic when he was working on Catastrophe. So that's another homebrew game that I don't think we've talked about. He mentions that he saw the Console Wars adaptation on Netflix, and it was very close to the book. He has some reservations about the dates and timeline. I kind of like to know what those were. He said he lived through the Console Wars of the 1990s, and some memories do not jive with what was presented. So that's interesting. You know, I had a podcast on the other day where they were looking into the history of the word mullet, you know, as a hairstyle, and that the first recorded instance of it being used to refer to the hairstyle was from like 1994, and how that messes with people's brains because everybody thinks that was a term they used in the 80s.
Yeah, totally.
But there's no evidence that it ever existed prior to 1994.
But I could see how Matrix has reservations about, I don't want to call them interpretations or whatever, but this is all from like the viewpoint of the marketers, and we are the people being marketed to. You know what I mean? So I could see how it could be viewed differently on different sides of that, you know?
Yeah, and also depending where you live too. I mean, your experience with like new game system launches, if you live in like New York City or Chicago or LA, is going to be very, very different than if you live not near like a major shopping mall. Or a major city. Because, I mean, it was a different time. Like today, because of the internet, everybody knows about everything at the same time. But like, you know, early Nintendo was basically just sold in like three cities. So someone could be telling a story about, yeah, 1986, we sold all these Nintendos. And you'd be like, I didn't even see a Nintendo in person until 1988.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it does make sense.
Let's see here. He wants to give you some grief for forgetting about the Jaguar CD and the Nuon. Although the Nuon was not marketed as a games machine, in your defense. It was more like a rich person DVD player home theater thing.
I think I even forgot about them since the last episode.
Mm-hmm. And I made a mistake, which look, I don't think anyone caught, is that it was not Tempest 2000 on the Nuon. It was Tempest 3000. And that they have that at Midwest Gaming Classic every year. So that's two Midwest Gaming Classic references in this episode if you are drinking.
Yeah. Listeners are having too many drinks tonight.
Yes. Well, luckily they're at the end of the show. And he actually has very positive things to say about Yahoo auctions in Japan. You can find a number of oddball consoles there. And just switching back to that topic, he lists a few kind of weird consoles that we have never talked about. I have not heard of one of these. So, Super Cassette Vision. Yeah, okay. So I'll go Super Cassette Vision, I've heard of. Tommy Tudor is maybe the translation. Never heard of that. TV Jack 5000, I have heard of. And Super Vision 8000. He did not mention the, was it the ACAN? The one, it was a system made in Korea that was seemed about, I've played one. It's about Genesis quality. Super A-Can, it was called. I can actually see myself getting a Super A-Can. I don't know about the rest of these. As for Splatterhouse 2, he definitely has played it and thought it was much more true to the first one compared to the third one, which is true. The third one is bad. And then seventh guest, not a fan of. He remembers selling like hotcakes when he worked at Babbage's, but he never got into it. And on social media, pretty 8 machine. We also asked people on something called social media for suggestions for good Halloween games or soundtracks. And what do you got here? Resident Evil 2, Symphony of the Night seem to be the ones people like. Analog stick on Dreamcast has got the Nintendo 64 cheap made of plastic feel. Were we talking about that?
We were talking about Super Mario 64 on the Dreamcast. So if you play that with the analog stick from the Dreamcast, it would probably not be the best, not the best experience. And then someone else also mentions that Nightmare in the Dark is the Halloween of Snow Brothers. Snow Bros.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that wraps up this very long episode.
Yes, I think so. Again, email at retrogameclub.net. We always are happy to talk about whatever you've got going on. I don't know if we're going to talk about, it's getting near, I'm already thinking about Christmas shopping. I don't know if we're going to talk about Christmas deals. Only because I don't think there's going to be like Black Friday sales this year, or if there are, they're all going to be online. And it doesn't feel the same.
Yeah, like Amazon Prime or Walmart Prime Day, whatever they do.
Or whatever Target does, or who knows, man. I know Target is like trying to compete with Amazon, but they got a ways to go. Like Amazon basically has their own post office. Like I'm sure where you live, they actually have Amazon trucks, right? Yeah. My wife like ordered something from Target and it got delivered by like a dude in a U-Haul.
Yeah, and that's where Amazon was like 5 years ago. Just like people in white trucks driving around. Yeah. Rented cars.
Yeah, not at all sketchy. Whereas Amazon has basically just built their own competitor to the post office.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all right. I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, so thanks for listening.
Thank you.